The water used to be a promise. For centuries, our people looked at the turquoise horizon and saw a pantry and a highway. It was the blue heart of our identity. But something shifted at the turn of the 21st century. The heat started staying in the waves. The colors on the reef began to fade into a ghostly white. We are living through a transformation that no mapmaker or ancestor could have predicted. This is not a distant threat for a future generation. It is the salt in our drinking water today. It is the sound of the wind turning into a predator. We are standing on the front lines of a global fever. Our islands are the first to feel the burn and the last to be heard. This is the history of our changing climate and the urgent fight for our very existence. The warming of the Caribbean Sea began as a quiet theft. In the early 2000s, our fishermen started coming back to shore with lighter nets and heavier hearts. They talked about the reefs. They called them the rainforests of the ocean. These massive limestone structures had protected our coastlines and fed our families for 10,000 years. But as the atmospheric carbon trapped heat, the surface temperatures of the Caribbean basin began to climb. It was a slow rise of 1 or 2 degrees. To a human, it feels like a pleasant afternoon. To a coral polyp, it is a death sentence. We watched as the Mesoamerican reef and the gardens of the Lesser Antilles turned into boneyards. This process is called bleaching. The coral expels the algae that gives it life and color. What remains is a brittle skeleton that crumbles under the weight of the tide. When the reef dies, the fish leave. When the fish leave, the village starves. This was the first destabilizing turn of the new millennium. We saw the impact in places like Belize and Saint Lucia, where artisanal fishing was the backbone of the community. The parrotfish and the grouper were no longer where they were supposed to be. They were moving deeper to find cooler water or simply dying out. This forced our people to move further out into the open sea in smaller boats. It increased the risk and decreased the reward. We were witnessing the collapse of an ecosystem that provided billions of dollars in natural services. The reef is our first line of defense against the power of the Atlantic. Without it, the waves hit the shore with their full, unbuffered strength. Coastal erosion began to eat away at the beaches that drive our tourism and the land where our houses sit. Roads that had been safe for 60 years were suddenly being washed out by high tides. The sea was no longer our partner. It was starting to reclaim the sand. By the year 2010, the data was undeniable. The Caribbean was warming faster than the global average. This heat is energy. It is fuel sitting on the surface of the water, waiting for a spark. We noticed the hurricane seasons were changing. The storms were not just becoming more frequent. They were behaving differently. They were stalling over islands and dumping record amounts of rain. They were intensifying from Category 1 to Category 5 in less than 24 hours. We call this rapid intensification. It robs us of the time we need to prepare. It turns a standard storm into an existential threat before the first plywood is nailed to the window. The question shifted from how we would live with the sea to whether the sea would allow us to stay at all. The blue horizon had become a loaded gun, pointed at every coastline from Port of Spain to Nassau. Can a culture built on the water survive when that water turns into a hostile force? The era of monsters arrived with a ferocity that broke our scales of measurement. In September 2017, the island of Dominica was a lush green jewel of old-growth forests and towering peaks. Then came Hurricane Maria. It was a Category 5 storm, with winds so high they stripped the bark off the trees. Within 12 hours, the entire island went from vibrant green to a charred brown. It looked like a forest fire had swept through the mountains. Every leaf was gone, every bird was silenced. The infrastructure of an entire nation was erased in a single night. We saw the same horror in the Bahamas 2 years later. Hurricane Dorian sat over Grand Bahama and Abaco for 40 hours. It was a slow-motion grinding machine. The storm surge was 20 feet high. It pushed the salt water deep into the land and poisoned the freshwater tables. When the water finally retreated, the ground was sour. The wells were ruined. This is the new normal of the Caribbean. We are no longer dealing with seasonal inconveniences. We are dealing with land that is becoming uninhabitable. When the salt water stays on the land, it kills the agriculture. In the Bahamas, the pine forests died because their roots were drowned in brine. In Dominica, The landslides caused by the massive rainfall reshaped the geography of the island. Entire villages were wiped off the map. This creates a psychological pressure that is hard to measure. Every June, our people start looking at the sky with a specific kind of dread. We track the dust from the Sahara and the depressions off the coast of Africa, like we are watching a countdown. The risk is now so high that insurance companies are pulling out of the region. If you cannot insure a home, you cannot get a mortgage. If you cannot get a mortgage, you cannot build a future. The erosion of our physical land is being matched by the erosion of our economic stability. The pressure of these storms is creating a new class of people. We call them climate refugees. These are not people fleeing war or political persecution. They are people whose homes have been taken by the weather. After Dorian, thousands of people left the northern Bahamas because there was nothing left to go back to. There were no schools and no jobs and no clean water. When a storm of that magnitude hits, it breaks the social contract. The government cannot keep up with the cost of rebuilding every 3 years. We are trapped in a cycle of recovery. We take out loans to fix the roads and the power lines, only to have them torn down again by the next monster. The debt piles up while the land disappears. We are paying for the right to stand on a sinking ship. At what point does an island stop being a home and start being a target? At what point does the cost of staying outweigh the love of the soil? We are not victims waiting for a handout. We are the architects of our own survival. In recent years, the leadership of the Caribbean has taken the fight to the global stage. Barbados Prime Minister Mia Mottley introduced the Bridgetown Initiative. It is a bold demand for the restructuring of global finance. She pointed out the obvious truth that the industrial north got rich by burning the carbon that is now drowning our islands. We are the ones paying the highest price for a lifestyle we did not lead. We are demanding that the world recognize climate debt. This is not about charity. It is about justice. We need the funds to build seawalls and move our hospitals to higher ground. We are talking about managed retreat. This is the painful process of moving entire communities away from the coastlines they have occupied for generations. It is a loss of heritage and a loss of heart, but it is the only way to keep our people alive. We are also looking at the ocean for solutions. We are investing in blue carbon. This means protecting our mangroves and seagrasses. These plants are far more efficient at trapping carbon than tropical forests on land. They also act as natural shock absorbers during storms. By protecting our natural environment, we are protecting ourselves. In places like Grenada and Jamaica, there are community-led projects to grow new coral reefs in laboratories and outplant them. We are trying to engineer our way out of a collapse. But these local efforts are a drop in the ocean if the rest of the world does not stop the warming. We are doing the work of survival while the rest of the planet debates the cost of transition. Our sovereignty is tied to the temperature of the air. If the sea rises another 3 feet, some of our islands will cease to exist as sovereign nations. They will become memories. The final line of this history has not been written yet. We are fighting for a future where our children can still see the reef and walk on the sand. But the urgency has never been higher. The heat is still in the water. The storms are still gathering. Every year, we hold our breath and wait for the wind. We are a people of resilience, but resilience has its limits. You can only rebuild a house so many times before you run out of wood. You can only lose so much land before you have nowhere left to stand. We are calling out to the world, not for pity, but for a partnership in survival. Our history is a testament to overcoming the impossible, but this is a challenge unlike any other. The cost of the world's progress is being billed to our shores. Who pays for the sins of the industrial north when our land disappears beneath the waves?